Aye. Seven I is a real complicated area. I think, to me, seven I is a device that has caused a lot of dissension between the regions. I think that there are other common denominators other than the monetary end of it. The common denominator is really found inside of us as individuals, not in any legislation. And 7I has served to divide us rather than bring us together.
I agree. The lady before said that, you know, we ought to beat them at their own game with their own tools, and that is the most it's part of the land that has divided us the most, but we ought to be able to maybe at least use the part that unites us, and that is the part that unites us. That is a common denominator. I'm not sure how it would be used, but I've not been able to find any other legal under the land claims to common denominator within the whole land claims, other than that joins all the people together.
Mm-hmm. I think we're losing. I think we're losing any questions they have of me. I think they're losing any questions they have of me.
Here, what?
I have a problem with having a statewide tribal government, if that's the concept that you're thinking of. I think that tribal government comes from your home. It comes from no place else. To me, governance comes from the individual, the acceptance of people of saying that somebody else has a right to govern you. First, it comes in your home, it comes from your family, then it comes from the people you're living with in the given community. I would find it very difficult, as coming from Clockwan, to think that anybody in Anchorage, or Juneau for that matter, can determine how I'm going to live. So, to me, anybody who's going to recognize government should recognize that I have a right to self-govern, and I have a right in my community to determine who's going to be my government or how I'm going to be government without a whole lot of interference from outside. Again, these are political feelings, and it's not addressing some. I think that other people probably have some comments that they want to make, and we're drifting sort of afield from. In other words, I think that what I have to add is now very limited, and anybody else probably can say a lot more at this point.
Well, I think Leona. We should thank Mr. Strong. Did you have a question for Mr. Strong?
Yes. In your legal research, is there any way that we can prevent the boards from developing or selling or moving our land to collateral?
Under current law, the only method that I could think of was using the corporate structure to impose a limitation via an amendment to the articles of incorporation or the bylaws. Shareholder resolutions. Other than that, I can't think of one that can be done legally. Any other method, anyway.
Would you just go and exclude the names now?
Every board member I've ever talked to of any corporation, regardless of what region the state is or what village they're coming in, what community they're coming in, the board members are shareholders of the corporation just as much as the people who are not board members, and they want to retain that corporation's land as far into the future as possible. There are times where I've seen some of the corporations just really strapped for dough, and wanting, in other words, ask some capital, and have had that option thrown out to them by the banks. Why don't you put up some of your land as collateral? And they said, absolutely not. Under no circumstances will we mortgage our land. Whether Gold Belt has been faced with that or has taken that as an option, I can't answer that. I'm not a member of Gold Belt, or do I know anything about their board of directors.
People
that might be a sense of suggestion you want to bring up here and make to them.
Well, I think that I think I should give others an opportunity to speak, but I think we should thank Mr. Strong for a very thoughtful presentation and raising some tough questions and doing his best to answer them. We're all aware of the extent of Mr. Strong's legal studies. I understand that he isn't quite yet a member of the bar, so all the nasty things that were said about lawyers earlier don't apply to him. We want that understood. Mr. Martin.
I'm John Martin. I was born in Tenneke, and my grandfather comes from Angoon, has moved to Tenneke. His name is Andrew Jack. I'm a Sea Alaska shareholder, and I moved, my family and myself moved from Sitka to Juneau in 1970. My main concern is in regards to Tenneke. I'm a father of six children. I have custody of one grandchild, so you can understand my concern. I know this is not the time nor the place to tell jokes, but I'd like to share with you a little humor that's probably pertinent to what I have to say. There's this one gentleman that was working for the mining company, and one day he came to the payroll office and was complaining that he was shortchanged on his paycheck. And the bookkeeper told him that last month you didn't complain when we overpaid you. So the gentleman responded and said, says, I can see one mistake, but two mistakes is just beyond me. He said, I think this is in comparison with the well, my concern about Tenneke is the fact that I can't understand, we're talking about 1991, and I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. I know there are a lot of legal questions that has not been cleared up in regards to the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. By that I mean the village of Tenneke. When we first applied for Tenneke, we had the numbers, and yet the ad hoc failed to uncover the executive order of 1935 that was issued by Franklin D. Roosevelt to my grandfather. I think it was between 12 and 15 acres. And I thought back about the humor about the gentleman that was shortchanged and overpaid previously. We talk about the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. It really isn't a memorandum. I think it's a law that was enacted. If the ad hoc surely didn't make the, had an oversight, or the Bureau actually didn't count enough heads of those people that actually gave their dollar and documented the fact that they were in support of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, why weren't those people compensated for it? Now I hear people from the audience that are concerned about those people that are born after December 18, 1971. Surely that the federal government could have actually looked at. What about those people that gave their dollar, $2, $5, whatever they may be? I'm sure that there are people that are that documented those facts, as well as the executive order of the Tenneke situation. And I also look at the Bureau. My grandfather, we have 160 acres called Catashan Bay. My mother's first husband applied for that 160 acres, which was granted to my grandfather. And yet that 160 acres was identified as Catashan Bay. I think there are a lot of inconsistencies, is what I'm talking about. And I hear some questions from coming from the audience in regards to the stocks. And I also, in the next breath, I understand, I hear people concerned about conflict of interest. Those people that have to deal with the stocks, those people that actually have to keep tabs on the enrollment. I know the federal government didn't come to me and say, Mr. Martin, we had an oversight that the ad hoc committee failed to uncover the executive order of 1935, indicating that that the Indians were first settled in Tenneke. The ad hoc said, or indicated to me, because I was the one that was spearheading Tenneke, they indicated to me and said, Tenneke was never settled, first settled by Indian people. These are the inconsistencies that I'm concerned about. What's going to happen in 1991 when we start talking about the stocks, the value of the stocks? What actually are they entitled to? Has the Alaska Native Claims Settlement been adequate? Have we covered all the bases? We talk about our fisheries. I also testified Alaska Federation of Natives prior to the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, at which I indicated to one of our native leaders and said, please don't trade our fishing and our subsistence way of life, because that's all we have as far as our people to survive. I didn't say that in those exact words. But those are my concerns. I think we have a great deal to be concerned about as far as 1991 is concerned, so that these inconsistencies will not continue, so that our children can actually have those benefits of those stocks and not those people that do have the direct conflict because of personalities, that those people are not deserving of those particular stock, but that they be documented. That I feel that the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, at the time the research was done, I think they did an excellent job, but I think it could have been better. I think as far as Tenneke, and I'm sure that there are other communities up in the Northern District that have a similar concern to mine, but for the record, I'd like to just leave this here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Well, we've had a good discussion this evening. Yes, sir. Oh, come here and speak if you wish, please.
My name is Wayne Smallard from Juneau, Alaska. One of the main things that I've seen is that if we don't have our land, if we don't have our stocks, if that goes, what's going to happen is you're going to have a simulation into the white society, and you're not going to have any rights. You're just going to be like everybody else trying to make it. But if we stick together and we keep a corporation, we get the things that we need, even if it's a little land, it's a place that we have, like a reservation or whatever, a land set aside. I don't know what the Gold Belt's point of view is on putting aside land for the natives. I think it's important, you know, that we have our land to continue our culture in our own way. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Smollett. Yes, sir.
Uh, I hear a lot of talk about corporations and...
Could we have your name?
My name is Franklin Williamson. I'm from Cake, Alaska. And one of the reasons why I moved over here to Juneau, I watched the habitat lands surrounding our native villages, the native village in Cake. Immediately following the land claim, someone asked the scenic and prime wildlife habitat land was released close proximity to the native village Cake. And the consequences of that was the wildlife deer took refuge off the island, Kupanaw Island, Kuyu Island, and Kiku Island. And this was a tremendous loss. This was food on the table that was taken off the table. And I blame the Land Claim Settlement Acts for what happened to Cake. Billions of dollars worth of money was taken. Prime timbers was sold. And we watched the timbers being hauled right beneath our noses. But yet we know this was our land. And the government was making money off of these timbers. And the private logging industries were making money off of these timbers. And I've had the opportunity to talk to many elderly, native elderly, and I got, and one, and one of them is 93 years old. This is from Cake. His name is Chester James Sr. He was over here and he participated in that that Indian, the culture thing that they had here. And I talked with him. And we talked about the land suit, the original land suit that was launched. This land suit, first land suit philosophy that was introduced to the Alaska Natives happened in Haines, Alaska, 1929. It was introduced by an individual by the name of, he was a lawyer, Judge Wickersham. And he demonstrated to the delegates the integrity of the law of 14th Amendment, United States Constitution. And I'm sure we all know that this law is a law that ensures life, liberty, property, the pursuit of happiness, the due process of law and equal protections of the law. And he used his daughter's phonograph. He demonstrated to the convention delegates. He said to the delegates, if this phonograph was taken without your consent and without your agreement, he said, this is a crime. And a crime can only be settled in the courts of law. And it was under this philosophy that Native Land Suit was launched. But we know that it was not settled under this law. It was rejected. It was settled outside of the law. In other words, it's a settlement that was settled without justice. And I believe that's the problem that we are having with this settlement today. Because it is a settlement, it represents a fraud. It's not, it doesn't represent the original native land suit. And no crime can be settled, we know, in this nation, under a nation that is governed under the supreme law of the United States Constitution. A crime has to be settled in the courts of law. The guilty individual does not settle his own crime. But the United States government, he settled his own crime without justice, without legal representations on both sides, the defendant and the accused. The Alaska Natives were deprived the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution. In other words, our forefathers honor trust, respect, and faith in this Constitution, this law, was dishonored. But then again, we know that we Alaskan Natives, we are a nation. When we talk about land claims, we're not just talking about corporations. We're talking about a nation. We're talking about government. And we're talking about laws. We had laws long before this nation was organized, came into being. In fact, we already enjoyed life, liberty, property, the pursuit of happiness, and equal protection of the laws and due process of laws. Our tribal laws already ensured us these rights. And these are laws that are violated and that are desecrated, and that was dishonored. And I'm sure there's a lot of Natives that are walking around in Alaska that are walking around with injured souls. For me, I, for one, is one. I know it doesn't give me dignity, pride, and self-respect. I have a deep injury that I walk around with, without honor, it seems. And this is the reason why I disliked from the beginning. I talked to the guys that were going to accept the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. I said, let's not accept this. Let's fight for this nation. We are a nation. We are a native nation. We were here first. We were created on this land. They brought the Bible to us, but God already dealt with us. We had a perfect nation that kept perfect social orders. Like, for instance, we had in our tribes, there was no divorces. In fact, a person got married to a raven and eagle, they never separated. This is a law. And we never had sicknesses among us. We were a highly civilized nation. We didn't value money, corporations. We valued courage and honesty and respect. And this is something that it seems like that we're losing sight of because of corporations. And I talked to a few of those old timers. All you need to do is look in this community over here. What good has the settlement done them? Take a look at one of the. You could look at two houses there. You would be ashamed. Every time I go past there, I go past there with shame. Because they are elderly, but they're not benefiting this land claim settlement act. And the only people that are benefiting are the few people that are working in the corporations. And there are not very many of them. I'm not discrediting the corporation, but I'm just merely saying that this corporation settlement did not meet the needs of all the people. In fact, the settlement law says that the settlement should be in conformity with the real economy and social needs of natives. But when they bought up all those businesses outside of Alaska, like Alaska General, Alaska Brick, Fossum Barge, Ocean Beauty. This did not meet our economy and our social needs. It met the non-native. They got the money back from us. And they tell us we could look forward to a dividend return. But take a look at some of those corporations now, like the 13th Regional, they lost all their money. See, Alaska, they're talking about $30 million. They only made back $3 million. Now, we know that this corporation is not benefiting our people, and that the logging industry that the native villages are forced into, they're merely doing it just to maintain them, to survive as a profit corporation. This is not the real economy of the Alaskan natives. The 22,000 acres of land is, it seems to me like it's just to keep themselves entertained while the federal government is opening up the lands for sale, like the way they did in Kit. They're preparing it in Huna, and no one is fighting against it, no one is talking about it. So their traditional way of life, their subsistence way of life, is in danger there, and nobody seems to be concerned. Everybody's concerned about a dividend return. And my idea, what we should do it seems to me like that this native land claims thing, why is it called the, why is it written down like native land claim settlement when it wasn't settled under the law? I think this thing is cancerous thing because there's no justice in it. Unless we resurrect that native land suit, I think we could do a little justice. And that's about all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Gene Strong, and I represent Skagway, but come down here as an individual, as I see this commission is designed to listen to the individual people that we all wish that our corporations would do, is listen to the shareholders, which this brings me to how I feel ANCSCA affects us. And to me, I can echo the same thing that everybody said tonight. I feel the same thing, and I identify with the same problems that they have. And the way I believe ANCSCA, as much as I know of ANCSCA, was designed primarily before it was passed to help the people in the tradition ways. But before ANCSCA was fully implemented by the makers of ANCSCA, the federal government found out that we was trying to put in all our traditional lifestyles. In order for them to short-circuit this, they passed a D-2 and told us if we don't accept our ANCSCA, we're not going to get anything because D-2 will push it over. But the benefits or the economics of it, I feel like the rest of the people, it isn't helping anybody except for the people that are directly involved with ANCSCA or the corporations. And I feel sad that our forefathers and our elderly aren't benefiting anything about it. Because they're the one that was going through the woods, knocking the trees down and everything, trying to get things organized so we could have this, hoping that this would help us, help benefit us in the future and take care of their grandchildren in the future. But it hasn't turned out that way. And to safeguard these corporations, I feel, would be best, as indigenous people, we should put it back into the tribal governments. That is my suggestion for everybody, to put these lands in trust in the tribal governments, because we are a sovereign indigenous people and that hasn't been taken from us. All we have to do is assert ourselves. I remember when I was a kid that they always told us never make waves. These non-natives, you know, they're okay, they just don't understand. We'll let them come into our communities or around our communities, and we'll try to show them that we're okay, because they think us natives are savages, and we shouldn't make any waves to them. So as we grown to adults, we always been passive, thinking of that, well, we shouldn't do this because it might hurt somebody. So then we and corporations, we start thinking in a passive way, well, how could I do this to appease the non-native government, the state or the federal government, because we've been raised that way. And so we keep bending over backwards and giving them more room because they need to flex a little more, because we don't want to hurt their feelings, because we're nice people. We're natives and we have pride and we can understand their problems. So we'll keep giving them a little more room. Now we're close to the edge of the table, we're going to fall off. So now we have to assert ourselves. Angska, to me, was nothing but an instrument to dissolve Alaskan Natives. It was a determination to put us all in one melting pot. They don't want to recognize our sovereign rights because they don't know how to deal with it, because we never told them how to work with us. We always let them try to figure out, or we always tried to fit ourselves into their world. And for 200 years they tried to appease, or we've been appeasing their world and trying to make it easy for both of us, and it never got us anywhere. We even let them believe that we don't have sovereignty, which now they think we don't have it. And the way I understand it, we do have sovereignty because we've never been conquered. Our forefathers never laid down to anyone. Only thing they bought of Alaska was the trading rights. They never bought the land. They never bought our fishing rights. They just bought the trading rights to trade throughout the world. And I don't know why we have to always ask permission from BLM or the state, permission to use our lands, especially if we know exactly where our lands, our traditional use lands are. Why do we have to keep asking them permission? And to me, it's a blow, because we've let ourselves believe that they are in control of our own destiny, which I don't advocate that we should rile up, but we should stand up and be counted, tell them this is enough. And let us have our just tribal land areas that we have traditionally used. And and then go on with living with the way we usually live, you know, because I hear this all over Alaska and down in the lower 48, that why don't we just stand up anymore? You know, we're not on reservations. I heard them telling us before Angst came around that we should, what did we want to do? Do we want to be a citizen or do we want to be reservations? Nobody wanted to be reservation because we know what happened to the lower 48. They got put out in the boonies or out in the middle of the desert. That's what happened to those people. So we didn't want to be in that kind of situation. So we took to be a citizen. But we really didn't know what that meant because in our traditional ways, we didn't have to deal with those kind of things. But the non-native people came in and we didn't want to make waves with them. We want to invite them because we're nice people. We're not the savages that they portrayed us to be. In local governments, I still believe that we have that sovereignty and all we have to do is exercise it, assert ourselves, and to deal with the lands and the corporations as shareholders. I feel we don't have to wait for the federal government to make a decision on what we want to do with our own land. We're the shareholders of the corporation, and if we put the lands in the IRA and traditional governments for safekeeping, then we could direct the use of those lands. We should be in partnership, or not partnership, but the federal government should recognize that we have this ability to self-govern ourselves. We're not a second-class city. We're not a first, or, you know, like unincorporated. What does unincorporated mean? I don't know. It sounds like a third-class citizen. And we're not a third-class citizen. We're equal to the rest of the governments in the United States. We're equal to other governments throughout the world as indigenous people, which has never been conquered. I kind of got mixed up here because I had to say these things. For years and years, I've been holding back. This is the way I've been taught, to never say anything against anybody. I always smile, which I always do, because that's kind of a person I am. And I have to say these things because I'm coming to a point where I see my kids and other kids, and I see our corporations, and I see our lands, and I see our subsistence way of life is all being sponged away by somebody that doesn't even have the authority, which I don't know where they got the authority, because we never gave them the authority to govern our rule our way of life. So I have to say these things to unload this thing from my chest. And after this, I don't want to sound like a rebel or anything, but this is my feeling, and from here on out, I'm going to be more open about it, to go to all the meetings. I've been through several meetings throughout the state of Alaska, and I hear the lower 48 are looking up to us to make the decisions that we need to make, and they're going to support us in any way that we, in any direction that we're going to go into. So I'm not afraid of bumping heads with the state or the federal government, and I don't think we're going to get in a shootout. You know, we're going to be recognized. They're going to have to stop and look at us. Angska is only one portion of it. This is when all the people are going to stand up and say, hold it, wait a minute. You know, this just isn't working for us. We never realized any money out of it except for a few of the corporations. But why do we have to go in this direction? It isn't our norm. Why can't you work with us or talk with us or to us instead of at us? Why can't we make up our own decisions, make up our own mind? Why don't you ask us instead of telling us this is federal regulation, CFR, this or that? We never had that before in those terms, but we had self-government. We have everything now is that the non-natives have. We have all their education tools. We have all the government levels. We just never exercised them because we didn't want to make waves to the non-natives. I want to do this because I don't want to feel guilty to my kids when, if I don't try to do something to save our lands and our subsistence way of life styles, and if we let the people that's governing this tell us how to do or how to live our lifestyles, I wouldn't be able to face my kids or anybody else. We have to stand up and be counted for. To what John Martin was saying about jokes, that is part of the tradition of telling jokes in these meetings. Fortunately, I don't know how to tell jokes. But that is one of the traditional ways in meetings. We always tell jokes to keep the spirits, keep your mind loose so you could won't get tied up like I just did. You know, I get kind of emotional, then I lose track of what I want to say because I want to blurt everything out. And telling jokes helps relax people. On that subsistence, you know, it's always an issue, and it'll never come to rest until we, as Native people, assert ourselves. Because, well, we won one battle up in North Chilkat Valley, where they were going to put a time limit on our subsistence. And we fought against it, and we succeeded in this one little battle. And that's because we stood up and said, no way, this, we can't do that anymore. We're pushed up in a corner where we can't breathe anymore. And if we continue to fight back, then they're going to have to stop and listen to us. I kind of feel like I jumped all over the place, but like our culture lifestyle has been suppressed for many years, that it's hard for me to bring it all out even in a flow because I didn't know how to put it out, just like the two girls that was before me. They said everything that I would like to said, but they was organized and I wasn't organized. Taxation. We always had that ability to tax ourselves. You know, we done it arbitrarily to ourselves, whether we knew it called taxation. When we wanted to build buildings, we just contributed to it. It wasn't a tax. It was the way we built houses in the traditional ways. We all volunteered our services. That was before we were getting into this monetary lifestyle. And we always helped each other, and we helped different tribes. We traded, and now we're getting into this monetary lifestyle, which is pulling us apart. Our corporations we thought was a good deal, but it's also pulling us apart in that we don't. A lot of people don't understand what it means. I just seen earlier tonight two elderly people walk out because they heard corporation talk. They didn't understand that. We need to find a ways that we could talk to these elder people and explain it to them in terms that they can understand. And that's part of the reason with a lot of this uneasiness with the shareholders at the corporation. They're learning how to talk this big fancy talk, and they're getting away from the shareholders. We don't understand what they're trying to say. Only thing that we understand is how come one corporation is making money and giving dividends while the other corporation is making money and they're not getting any dividends. And I think one of the big issues that we could solve, or one of the things that we could solve a lot of this problem with our corporation, is if the villages would stick together and assert themselves for self-government or sovereignty and take those corporations back into their circle and then have the corporations make the money for them. And then all of us could always be rested assured that we have the land in trust and not worry about losing our identity. But one thing I can't overemphasize, why do we have to ask BLM to use our own property, our own lands? It's very disturbing because we never asked them to govern us. I don't know where they get the idea that they can run or dole out the lands or whatever, or take lands that, you know, in the areas that was already ours. Who gave them the permission to do that? And why do we have to ask them permission to use it back again? But this is all I have to say, but to re-echo the things that the ladies and the people that was before me at this commission stated, I really liked the way they talked, and I'm glad that there's people in this organization, or the people in Alaska, the native people, are getting smart enough that we can recognize the things that was told us to be true that isn't be true. And I'm glad to see them stand up, because it makes me feel a lot easier, and that we're not going to be alone in this thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Strong. Thank you very much. Well, with your permission, I think this might be a good time to adjourn until tomorrow. I just want to say that it's been a very worthwhile evening, and I've learned a lot, and I want to thank all of you for coming, and especially, of course, to thank those of you who made presentations. They were thought-provoking and very, very worthwhile, and they're recorded on the transcripts, and we will be sending the transcripts to the ANB, and the transcripts of what is said here to the ANB and the Tlingit and Haida Central Council and Sea Alaska, and the whole record of the transcripts from all the meetings throughout Alaska is deposited in the University of Alaska at Fairbanks in their library. I should also say that when I write the report of this commission next year, I will be sending a copy to everybody who's made presentations at the meetings. Let me invite you to come here again tomorrow at 10 a.m. when we will start and just take our time and give people who come an opportunity to be heard. I think this has been a nice informal and easy to participate in session. Yes, Mr. Strong.
I want to also thank you for allowing us to come before the commission and allowing the people that had things to say to express it fully before, you know, without any kindness. That is also one of the traditional things that people was able to do in the circles of the government, was to be able to express their feelings until they exhausted themselves, and somebody else should
Well, thank you, Mr. Strong. I appreciate that. So we'll start again at 10 in the morning, and we'll carry on tomorrow and then again tomorrow night. And if you want to add anything to what you've said today, please feel free to come and to do so. And if you are coming just to sit in and listen, as I am, well, then I will welcome you back for that purpose, too. Yes, sir. No, we have your names. We know what we're doing. So we'll see you tomorrow at 10 o'clock then.